and he's been severe on anything short through the course of the day, and he goes all the way for six over mid-wicket.
Catch it as the call, he's a goner, thank you for coming.
That's clip square of the wicket, punches the air at the far end, a wonderful inning.
Swinging, leg side, he's got a lot of this, that's away for six.
Tries to catch it, and they're claiming a wicket, and they've got a wicket.
This is the talk of Trent Bridge. I'm Matt Freeman, and I'm joined this week by two senior Trent Bridge figures and a pair of rising stars in the Nottinghamshire ranks. Director of Cricket Mick Newell and head coach Peter Moores check in to discuss how cricket's approach to training has evolved since their playing days.
Richard Hadley, best bowler I played with, one of the best bowlers I'm sure Pete played against, you know, six laps and press-ups. And that was all he ever did.
Every club had a cross-country run somewhere for about 3.5 miles. It'd knacker us all up, and then we'd go and play cricket for the next 6 months. What I don't want people to think that era, that the cricket wasn't tough. There was some really tough cricket played.
Liam Paterson-White recalls his winter in New Zealand and talks about his mentality heading into his first season since signing a pro deal.
When I speak to the coaches, they always say the easy part is getting the contract, the hard part is maintaining the contract. So my job now for my career is to make sure I can keep maintaining that contract.
And Sol Budinger explains the origin of the song that left many an Outlaws fan with a tear in their eye.
I kind of just wrote down all the lyrics, got all the syllables and everything, and wrote it for my initiation. Just a bit of fun, really. I think a lot of people enjoyed it, which is the main thing.
But first, I asked Peter Moores how he was finding these unusual times.
Well, it's different. It's a strange feeling to be in April and not actually coaching or playing cricket. I think similar to Mick. I mean, my first year as a pro was 82. I can't remember any time in April where I've been forced to have to do other jobs around the house because I can normally use it as an excuse to get out of there. But it's been different. I mean, I think like the interesting part of it, I suppose, has been that cricket seemed fairly small fry compared to the bigger challenges that are going in the country. But you know, at the moment, you start to get into a rhythm, but underlying is this feeling that obviously you'd love to be able to get out there and put on some cricket for the members and for the fans and everybody out there.
What have been those jobs you've found yourself doing that you try and avoid normally April time?
The garage had to be cleared out, so the garage has been done. The fences have been sprayed. I've done my patios. The grass gets its bit of a cut every now and then. And what I've started to do is a much more fun one actually now, because I mean, we're doing different stuff. Obviously, there is a well-being thing about our staff and our players, so that's underlying all the time. There's also I think through the club itself, and Mick can speak more about that, a care for members and everybody associated with the club. So, but I've actually just, I went back into, when I cleared the garage out, I found a couple of old suitcases with photos and all sorts of stuff in. So that dragged me to drag one into the house and start to look through some of that, which has been, it's been good fun actually.
Yeah, I suppose that is a thing at the minute, isn't it, Mick? That there's a community of however many thousand members who'd love to have been able to come down, and the weather's been glorious this April, but we're all sort of holed up in our own houses for a bit.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that hit home last week when we started ringing around groups of members, and always interesting to talk to them and to hear how much Trent Bridge means to them and how much they're missing it as well as we are. And I think with the, you know, as Pete said, the fantastic weather, it just makes it seem even more like the cricket season. And I think sometimes you do also tend to forget it's still only the middle of April. Sometimes it feels like we're much further into the summer because the weather's been so good. But we're all chomping at the bit to have a chance to get out there and play.
Pete mentions clearing out garages, those sorts of things. Has there been things occupying your time that you'd rather than not be in April?
Well, I quite like cooking, so I've discovered a few new recipes and a few new menus, so I've quite enjoyed doing that sort of thing, and just got a bit more time during the day to plan that. But no, I keep out the garden, and I'm not even allowed in the garage. So.
which recipes? What's the signature dish at the minute?
Anything with veg and fish. I'm afraid my other half doesn't eat meat, so that does lead to some envious looks at the coaching staff's barbecues, but you know, I have to live with that.
Now, we talk about sort of keeping in touch with the members. I suppose keeping in touch with the players and the general playing squad as well must have been a big part of what you're on with at the minute, Pete.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, the players have handled it, I think, well so far, in that there's not a lot they can do. That, you know, they can't obviously play. They're frustrated like everybody else is. They want to get out there, and they've got a point to prove. Those that were here last year know in Red Bull we didn't do what we wanted to do, so they want to get out there and show people that they've moved their games forward. So, but yeah, they're physically staying fit. A lot of, we're just trying to make sure. There sort of seems to be two sorts of things for me. One, you've got the older players, often with kids, who are getting used to homeschooling and life busy in a completely different way, to some of our younger players who might be in a flat by themselves, and that's got its own challenges with it. So I think they all understand exactly where things are, the importance of what's going on, and them taking their responsibilities. And the general feel I've got from all of them is they just want to help. They want to put in if they can anywhere, and just be part of the community as best they can, and make sure that we move through this as quick as we can.
From everyone I know, I think, who's got young kids, that is the toughest thing at the minute, that becoming the teacher for a few hours a day thing. Are you glad you've avoided that?
Yeah, I'm not sure I've been any good at that. I don't know. It sounds. I spoke to Steve Mullaney the other day. Obviously, he's got two fantastic kids, and I think people are learning stuff. I mean, like the maths seems to be a challenge for a few of us, I think. It's got a couple of things for me. It's also throwing up different stuff. You know, I mean, I think players maybe like myself, you find yourself contacting sometimes people you haven't spoke to for quite a long time. You end up in different conversations. There's definitely a care that goes with it. It's a really healthy thing, I think, for everybody. And maybe a simplicity to how what's important and what's not important. So I think those things are really good to come out of it. And, you know, what we're hoping for as a group, as a club, I think generally that it'll make us tighter as a group. You know, maybe not just a playing group, as a coaching group, and also as a club as a whole.
I suppose one of the last things that would have happened before we went into this slightly odd period was the trip to Rutland, to RAF Cranwell Adventureland, and that whole idea of getting the squad together and tighter. How did you find that experience?
Yeah, it was. We had a really good 2 days, actually. It was one of those where, you know, we weren't sure to do it to start with, because we did want something to come across gimmicky. We wanted to go away somewhere, but we wanted to spend time together away from cricket, where we gave everybody a chance to really connect again on a different level. And we went there, and we basically RAF Cranwell on the first day, which was doing high ropes, which was scary in some ways and fun, but we had a real laugh and we had a really good time and learned a bit as we went through. And the second day we went on to Rutland Water, where we basically did kayaking, building rafts, and we did it all with a company called Adventure Rutland. They were great. But the interesting thing, we had a meal that night, of which we had various players doing initiations and different things. But I came away from 2 days thinking it felt really comfortable to be around that group. And it didn't matter. Certainly on the evening, we had sort of three big tables of probably 10 on each table, or 8 or whatever on each table. I don't think anybody was bothered who they sat next to. And I think that was a real good sign for us as a group, that we're getting to know each other well. We'd spent 5 months training together. We had quite a lot of the lads around, which is good. So I came away thinking, yeah, well, I think we're in a really good place now to start a season. Unfortunately, that season isn't going to start yet. But hopefully those bonds and connections won't be lost. But yeah, the lads got stuck in. That's what I like. Because actually it was freezing cold. It was a long old day in some ways. But the guys that did it well. And you know, like most things, I mean, part of that is that you're in front of everybody, so you've got to front up and have a go. But everybody got up there, everybody had a bash, everybody did it. And on the water, same. It was cold the next day. But there was a lot of laughing done, and a lot of fun. And the young, you know, at one point, you know, you sort of look back at the sort of youngest lads, the sort of, I think Joey Everson was youngest at 18. I think, unfortunately, I was oldest at 57 or whatever. But that broad spectrum of ages and people, but every sort of got together as a group, which was grateful.
Now, one of the faces who was there was Sol Budinger, going into his first year with a professional contract, and a man who wrote a song you might have spotted on social media a couple of weeks ago. I caught up with him a few days ago to ask him where the inspiration for his ode to Trent Bridge came from.
It was actually me and Lyndon on the way back from rookie camp. We were stuck in traffic in Birmingham. And then we were playing this song, Country Roads. And then I had to do initiation, and then I kind of just wrote down all the lyrics, got all the syllables and everything, and wrote it from initiation, and then kind of escalated quite quickly.
We are Nottingham, and we are proud. We take wickets and hit massive bombs.
So, just a bit of fun, really. And then to turn out what it is, it's really... It's quite funny, but I think a lot of people enjoyed it, which is just the main thing.
Bradford Road, take me home to the place I belong. West Bridgeford, Trent Bridge, take me on down Bridgeford Road.
after the team bonding day, really. I performed not as well as my mate, but it was good fun, and everyone got involved after the first line. Everyone kind of got involved there, and yeah, it was just good fun, really.
Celebrate like you, Radcliffe Road. Take me home to the place I belong. West Bridgeford, Trent Bridge. Take me home down Bridgeford Road.
Just my mate in Oz. My dad's quite close with him. His dad, music producer and that. He lives in Melbourne now, so he sent him a message, and then within a few days he sent me out the song. It was just brilliant. But like, yeah, talented Trent, to be honest. Wish I could play guitar and sing like that.
And we chased it on down Radcliffe Road. Take me home to the place I belong. West Bridgeford, Trent Bridge. Take us home down Bridgeford Road, Radcliffe Road.
Were there any other initiations that night? Anyone else get up on stage?
Yeah, they did. I think the good one was Trigo and Kevin Shine did a dirty dancing scene, and that was quite funny, quite enjoyable. But it was a good night, to be honest.
That sounds like the sort of thing you're never going to be able to forget.
No. Shiny in a dress, but yeah, that was funny.
Take us home down Bridgeford Road.
That's Sol Budden, you're talking to me a couple of days ago. Mick, when did you first hear of this song that Sol had written?
Well, I think Pete told me after the 2-day trip. I'm not exactly sure how it came about. But the first time I heard it properly was when it was on the website, and I didn't recognise that bloke's voice. And then I realised it was, I think, Sol's mate from Australia who actually sung it. So
yeah, Sol can't sing like that.
No. He's a hidden genius anyway. I mean, he's a lovely lad. He's a great kid. And for him to come up with something like that as an initiation to joining this club, I think it's a fantastic effort.
How was it to see it for the first time down there with Sol's maybe not quite so tuneful rendition?
I mean, it went down a storm on the night because of the effort. The whole idea of initiations often is you put the effort in. So he put the effort in. He had a few beers first because he was literally, like any 20-year-old, you're going to stand in front of everybody and do it. And the lyrics were, it was fun, it was a great laugh. The chorus we all sang along because we all knew the song anyway. And by the end, it had gone an absolute storm. But none of us really expected that then, probably 2 weeks later, it would appear on our WhatsApp group to sort of say, listen, lads, I got a mate of mine to record it. Boom, here, this is the proper version. If you listen to it then, we're all now in lockdown at that stage. You listen to it then, the lyrics actually are pretty poignant, really, when you think about it, about the fact that it, you know, take me home. It felt even more sort of significant at that time. But I mean, really, on the night, it was a great night. In that, not just Sol, you know, Joey Everson. There's lots of lads did little turns and stuff like that and had some fun. And it was all the best thing, and all the lads chipped in and whatever. But yeah, it was a good night.
How's Sol been fitting into the squad overall? Coming into the senior squad properly for his first full season, I suppose.
Yeah, along with, I mean, we've got three or four rookie contracts who've come onto the staff, and they've done great, really. I mean, the winter's a nice time for them in many ways. People like, you know, you've got Lyndon James, you've got Sol Budinger, you've got, you know, lots of young players now around, which I think helps them all in some ways. And the winter's a good time. You develop, and you're not put under the pressure of the game. So it's a case of getting integrated, learning off senior players, moving your game forward. And then, you know, I think when there's some, you know, if we can get out there and play, what they've got to accept is that they'll have some inconsistencies probably how they'll play. They'll have times when it really works and times when they get frustrated with it. The key will be for the ones that move on and become really good players, they'll work through that and they'll start to develop themselves into the sort of players they want to be and what we hope they can be in the future for the club.
Something I have noticed with Sol, Mick, is that as he's moved into the senior game this time, he's swapped his squad number from, I think, 96 to squad number 1 for this year. Does that say something about his sort of mentality, if you like?
I think it says a huge amount about his self-confidence to grab number one. The number one's been vacant here since, I think, Brendan Taylor, I think, had it and then left it. So I think it says an awful lot about him. But, you know, there is a touch of sort of maverick genius about him. I saw him get 100 and something at over at Birmingham a couple of years ago, and there was something about it that you just made you go, wow. And we just hope that he can develop that talent and really bring that to the fore in all formats of the game.
Now, another young gun who's making his impression on the senior squad, came in towards the back end of last year, Liam Patterson-White, has spent most of his winter away from Trent Bridge and away from the country, actually in New Zealand. I caught up with him a couple of weeks ago to find out how his winter went down under.
I've never been away before in the winter, so it was my first time going away, and I thought it was about putting myself in a place where it was uncomfortable for me, but I knew it would benefit me. Like in professional sport, you're going to get places where you're not in your comfort zone, and I thought this is probably as far out as I can go from my comfort zone. For me, especially at the start of my career, I feel it was a good opportunity for me to go and develop me as a player and me as a person as well, living away from home, meeting new people, and overall the whole experience was brilliant. Playing in different conditions, different wickets. Club cricket, there was no side screens. I was bowling at the professional team in Wellington the whole time. Made a couple of friends from there as well, and it was just a really good learning experience, and I really, really did enjoy it.
What was Jeeton like to work with? Was that the first time you've worked with him?
Yeah, he was really good to work with. He didn't speak to me like he was my mentor, which was what his job was while I was there. He spoke to me like a fellow professional. He'd be always there, and he'd be like, right, I'm going to bowl with you, and I'm just going to watch you, like just little things, maybe your front side or front foot, or things that I work on, and then he'd pull me aside for 5 minutes and go, right, okay, this is what I've noticed, let me know what you think. And that was almost slightly a different side to coaching than over here. Over here, I feel like I know what the coaches know me. So I had to almost express myself over there a lot more to him, so he had got a better understanding of me, and I got a better understanding of myself as well.
What do you think the main things are you've sort of gained, sort of in a cricketing sense, I suppose? How do you feel you're better when you've come back to when you went out there?
I feel like I've got a better knowledge of when things go right and when things go wrong. So if my consistency isn't quite where it needs to be, I kind of understand why and how to fix it. And I think it's really, really helped me, especially coming back when I've spoken to the coaches back here in Notts. They gave me the freedom to go, right, okay, you can experiment. And I really enjoyed myself coming back, obviously because it was the environment I've been craving. I've missed a lot. I've wanted to play as much cricket as possible. And coming back and being able to have that freedom to say, right, okay, let's see what you've worked on and let's go from there. So the way I've come back, as a bowler, has been a lot better than when I left to go. And with batting, I made a slight adjustment where I used to have a really closed face. I've now opened my face up a little bit to access the offside a bit more. And when I explained it to Morsi, he was like, that's brilliant. Like, you're understanding your game. And no one goes from, having the same kind of technique their entire career. Everyone chops and changes here and there. And if that's what works for you and feels natural for you, then that's what you need to go with.
How does it feel different this year going in with that pro deal, having played a bit towards the back end of last year? Did it feel different going back into the squad this time?
Yeah, it did, definitely. I felt like a bit of a weight was lifted off my shoulders going back. Not so that I can relax, but more that my focus and concentration can be on playing good cricket instead of trying to work on getting a contract. It's still pressure, but it's two different types of pressure, I feel like. So when I speak to the coaches, they always say the easy part is getting the contract, the hard part is maintaining the contract. So my job now, for me, for my career, is to make sure I can keep maintaining that contract. So when I went back, everyone was really happy to see me, and I felt really at ease with all the lads, like I'd only seen them the week before. going back into the tent, it was a real nice, homely feeling, like I belonged there. Having a week or 2 weeks of that team time where, you know, I can meet all the new signings and be able to integrate myself back into the squad was really, really nice.
That's Liam Patterson-White speaking to me a couple of weeks ago. What have you made of Liam when he came back into the setup, Pete? When he got a bit of time down in the tent a few weeks ago, how did he seem compared to when he went away to New Zealand?
Yeah, I mean, it was good to see him again. He's had a good winter. In some ways, what was nice, he did an old-fashioned type winter. You know, when I was a player, we all went away in the winters and spent 6 months to play, sometimes coach, maybe captain aside and whatever, and you grew up as a man as well as a player. And Liam's done the full sort of 6 months, which I think was really good for him, and he's performed as well. So when he came back, it was really interesting. I thought when he came back, like most things, he's been playing good standard cricket out there, but there was a bit of tidying up to do on a certain little bits for his bowling and his batting, which he did pretty quickly. Different conditions, the tent was fantastic for that, to play on English conditions in this country. And he did what we saw that before he left. Really, was he? You know, he worked very hard, and with the tweaks, really, were not really changes. It's about just smoothing things out, ready so he gets the consistency ready if he's lucky enough to get a go at the start of the season. Attitudinally wise, he's hungry. You know, he's a young man who really wants to achieve in the game. And what we saw last year was somebody who showed straight away, 20 wickets at 20, that he could be successful at first class level. I think the 50 he got at Scarborough was another significant one for him. It was a tough game against good opposition and always quite a lively crowd there. So I mean, generally he's shown he's got the ability and the temperament, and you know, this season will be about, when he gets a chance out there, about backing that up.
And he mentioned to me as well, when I spoke to him a couple of weeks ago, feeling like he's got a bit more freedom since coming back to experiment a bit with his game, that you're giving him that space to find what works for him. Is that something you're aware of?
I don't think we've changed particularly that much. I mean, I think the challenge often with players, and it'd be a word of caution for any player really, is that there's a time for exploring, there's a time for cemented in to be consistent. And, you know, Liam's at the point when we get to the season now where keeping things simple and doing what he does. He's got a great ability when he plays well with a bat to play late, so that's a real focus for him. And bowling-wise, you know, when he bowls with pace on and keeps it wicket to wicket, he's really hard work because of the pace he bowls and the turn he gets. It's sort of like natural variation for him. So for me, the advice for all those players is you keep it simple. Your game will naturally evolve, and there'll be times, there's windows for you to start to explore. His game looks in good shape to me, from what I've seen. And as I say, at the moment, we've got to be patient and wait to get out there. But he's one of those players that I think, you know, not just him, we'll all be excited to see what he can bring this season when we get a chance to play.
It sort of will have looked a little bit like an overnight success in terms of going into the team and getting that 5-for-on debut, but I suppose, Mick, the Patterson-White story at Notts goes back quite a bit further.
Yeah, a number of years through the county age group sides and then into the academy and onto the second team. So very rarely is there an overnight success nowadays in professional sport, because you kind of have a track of these lads mostly all the way through the system. I mean, Fletch, you could say a few years ago, was almost an overnight success from Hooters to the straight to the car park attendant onto the field. You know, but generally these lads come through a system now that's been ongoing for a number of years. But I think Liam thrived last year, and I think he did very well in the winter time because one or two things that were put in place for him out in New Zealand didn't come off. So he was left on his own, as Pete says. It was almost like an old-fashioned overseas trip, and he stuck at it well for 5 months and has come back, you know, hopefully a better cricketer and a better bloke as well.
Do you remember anything from his time coming through in the seconds in the academy where he sort of started to stand out as an all-rounder, as a bowler?
I think last year, in the first half of last year, the performances that he put in were so strong with the bat and the ball that the first team, you know, came looking, not knocking almost, if you like. So there was a huge improvement in the first half of last year. I think he put 4 centuries together in the second team and the academy matches, plus the wickets as well. But there was a huge improvement in performance in the first 3 months of last year, which he then replicated in the first team in the following 3 months.
Does Fletch remain the only player you've pretty much signed straight from Hooters? Is that not a common progression?
From Hooters or in Hooters,
yeah. Now, we talk about the kind of traditional winter, I suppose, which maybe is less common, but something that Liam went through over the last few months. Is that something you both remember from your playing days, that different kind of approach to wintering as a cricketer?
Well, it's a hugely different game, you know. I mean, we used to turn up on the 1st of April pretty much, and then on the 30th of September you'd get your last pay packet and say see you next April. And even the winter training, you were very much left, well, there wasn't any training, to be fair. It was a few nets after Christmas with Ken Taylor and that sort of era then. When we had John Birch as coach, we used to meet up more regularly for off-season training, but again, it was very optional. So you were very much just employed for 6 months, and I had winters working at Gunnamore, a couple abroad, working in a children's home care centre in the city centre, all sorts of different jobs, County Hall. So we had to pick up other work. So it's undoubtedly a better game and a better system where you have players, you know, 12 months of the year. I think it has led to players perhaps not going abroad as much on their off their own back, and I think it's a good thing if we can encourage them to do that, and one or two of our lads have done that over the past 2 years, and I think going forward we would want to encourage that.
How were winters for you, Pete, in the time you were playing?
Yeah, no, dissimilar to Mick in some ways. You did a multitude of different things, really. I tended to go, I went to Zimbabwe with Graham Hick when he first came on. That's quite a long time ago. I went to South Africa and, lucky enough, played some really good cricket out there, which was nice. But I had winters at home and started doing some coaching. I was coach for the club, was a postman for a bit, worked in Sainsbury's, I think. And, you know, you did things to start as a young player to get by. I played football, loved my football in the winter. So it had its perks in many ways. So, you know, it's just a different way of life. But the training side, Mick's right, you tend to come back, and training and physical training was often, you know, you did a few laps, or the every club had a cross-country run somewhere for about 3.5 miles that would knacker us all up, and then we'd go and play cricket for the next 6 months. But it was different. What I don't want people to think that era, that the cricket wasn't tough. There was some really tough cricket play. There was a lot to get into those 6 months. And the winters had to be busy in different ways for players. And now there's a chance for players to move the game forward in the winter, indoors, or often now with franchise cricket, they can go and play with some of the best players in the world if they're lucky enough to go and play. But it's 2020, you know, it's not that same option to go and play red ball away. And I think sometimes the long haul, that the sort of 5-6 month trip, what's good is you find yourself as a player. I mean, my first trip to South Africa, I sort of remember, you know, I was sort of there. You could be anybody you wanted to be. You know, you could just, you know, no one knew you, and you could just go for it. And that meant that, you know, you develop things about yourself that you don't always get if you're in a structured system. So, I'd encourage anybody when that chance comes. And we tend to leave them a little bit and say, you know, this is your chance. Support them from afar, but they also want them to sort of get some freedom to be their own person.
That must be much more difficult to find now, because I suppose a lot of winters overseas might involve other tournaments where you are known, you're a name, and it's more difficult to disappear a little bit.
Well, for young players, I don't think it's that. It's still out there. I mean, part of that is the young player having I say to Liam, you've got to have the will to go away, because when you first go away, actually it's quite daunting. You know, you get on a plane, you land somewhere, you don't know anybody. Anybody who plays sport for a while gets to know that as soon as you land somewhere, you make friends in a heartbeat, really. You know, you get in a network. And sometimes you've got to go through that homesick bit a little bit. When you know, if you're 20, 21 away, they can have its tough bits in it, over Christmas maybe, whatever. But the upsides are, I think, far outweigh that. And I think a lot of players of my sort of era mix would have gone through that. And they put quite a lot in that of maturing them quickly to players. Because, you know, the county game then, to get into a first team and stay in that first team, you know, you had to work hard to get in there. The senior players, you know, it depends what senior players you had. They're not all dragging you up. They didn't want you to take your job, so you had to get yourself good to try and fight your way into the side.
Is that a sort of mentality you think's changed at any point in a dressing room, Mick, really? Are the senior players more welcoming than they used to be? Is there a change?
Yeah, I think Pete's right. It depends on the group of players that were in the dressing room. I think one of the issues around the winters now is that when we were playing, we weren't missing anything because there was nothing going on. It was just getting dark at 4 o'clock and being cold and miserable. Whereas now, you know, there's a programme that Pete and the guys are running from November onwards. And I think sometimes there's a reluctance from players to miss that period of improvement, perhaps, that fitness improvement, that skills improvement. They feel they need to be here, they want to be here. So I think we tend to look at individual cases with players and suggest that, yes, it would be a good time to go away. And I think with Liam, it was the perfect time to go away. I think older players are, you know, very welcoming now in this dressing room. I think, you know, we had a multitude of characters here in the 1980s. They were still a hell of a good side, but they might not have been the best buddies all the time. But you get that. That's just a different thing. You know, that's part of what makes sport what it is. But, you know, going back to Pete's point about fitness and back in the day, I mean, Richard Hadley, best bowler I played with, one of the best bowlers I'm sure Pete played against, you know, 6 laps and press-ups. And that was all he ever did, six laps and press-ups. And Rice was the same. You know, there was no gym. You know, the only time we went in the gym was when it was raining and we didn't know what else to do. And it was run by the cricket development officer, you know, back in the day. So it's very different, but highly skilled at the time and highly skilled now.
How were you welcomed into that dressing room first up?
Well, I was plonked next to Derek Randall and said, you'll be changing there. So he just used to steal my kit most of the time. There was no named kit in those days, no numbers on the kit. So I had 4 or 5 years sat next to Derek, which was always entertaining.
Now, we'll close one of the questions I've asked most people we've had on the podcast over the past few weeks, who've mostly given the same answer about who it was that inspired them to be a cricketer, who was their sporting hero. If it's not someone out of the 2005 Ashes squad, well, that's just who it's been every single time, apart from Dan Christian, for understandable reasons. But for you, was there someone, maybe it wasn't a cricketer, maybe it was a family member, how was it, or who was it, that inspired you to become a player?
Well, the first player I can remember sort of thinking, wow, was Sonny Gavaskar. And he used to bat in this plastic skull cap underneath his floppy hat. And I can remember watching him bat thinking, this is fantastic, what a great player, you know, that sort of thing. I suppose that was my first cricketing idol in terms of a batsman. I mean, you know, you're talking to the wrong men here if you think the 2005 Ashes is inspiring. Well, yeah. but yeah, I mean, my dad used to run me down here. Frank Woodhead was my first coach in the indoor nets down at Trembridge. I was scared stiff of Frank Woodhead for years. But that was fantastic. You know, he was a tough man, but he was great. I mean, he was the first team coach effectively at the time, and there he was looking after the 9, 10, 11 year olds. So that was a great thing. But my dad and Sonny Gavaskar would be the player who I thought, wow, that's a really great, I'd like to follow that.
So Frank Woodhead as a coach, even if you were 9, 10 years old, was a pretty tough taskmaster, was it?
Yeah, he was scary. Yeah.
Pete, for you, who was it that so inspired you into the game?
Probably my first intro into the game was actually was my elder brother Tony, probably, who used to throw balls. We had an entry down at home, and he used to throw balls, and literally the old tennis ball, and if it came off your bat and hit the wall without bouncing, you're out. If you got it down the middle, you were fine. So that's probably where it started. And then I was lucky through school and through the club I played for, school teachers often, one guy called Ian Wilson was fantastic for me, just because he'd stay and run the nets, so you could play, and you knew he wanted you to do well. The cricketer who really drew me in was Alan Knott at the time. I mean, Bob Taylor was a big player, but Alan Knott, I got Alan Knott's book, and clearing out the garage, I found the same book, I've still got it, the Alan Knott book on wicketkeeping, with his red Slazenger gloves. And that, so I became Alan Knott, sort of crazy, bits of plasticine here, a bit of tape there, change this like that, because that's all in this book. So he'd be my first one from a keeping point of view. And then keepers were keepers, you know, batting was a secondary thing, it was all about keeping really. So yeah, he'd be the one who actually sucked me in from a batting point of view. Frank Hayes, probably Lancashire, the blonde haired David Gower type character of his era at the time for me, who actually coaches locally now anyway. But Frank was a lovely player to watch, and I followed Lancashire at that point. So yeah, they were probably the two.
Does the Alan Knott wicketkeeping textbook stand up to what you do today, or have things moved on a bit?
Yeah, I mean, I think Alan Knott stands up to the test of time. I mean, a phenomenal keeper. And like most things, he did the simple things well. There's change, take the ball in front, take it behind. There's lots of things that go with all little changes in sport, but a lot of the basics of that book, of your head being in line with your hands, etc., have not changed since time immemorial, I don't think.
Nice to get a couple of different answers that aren't Freddie Flintoff. Always makes a change. Well, thank you both for joining us today. That's it for this week's Talk of Trent Bridge podcast. We'll be back soon, but there's plenty more stuff, behind-the-scenes content, on the website at trentbridge.co.uk.